Blog Talk Radio.
Winter wind getting in, though my door's shut tight. Memories last to leave before I sleep through the night. Promises never kept, set my feet on the road. On the move, staying true to something I heard long ago. Give it one more tomorrow. Don't let go of your dreams. Don't let the silence that follows your questions keep you from trying again.
Welcome to Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. I'm your host, John Anastasio, and I'm coming to you from Clinton, Washington, on beautiful Whidbey Island. And it's getting cold here. We're looking forward to the upcoming Yule season and all that that means and all the warmth and spirit that that brings. This is a show about growth and the human spirit, and it's based on the content of my book called Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. And we'll talk about where you can find that book and what you can expect from it a little bit later in the show. But I am, for those of you who haven't listened in before, I'm a Corellian clergy member. I've been a Corellian and a Wiccan for a decade or so. I've been on a spiritual path for about as long as I can remember. And I'm a Reiki master teacher and a shamanic healer. And that's a big part of the work that I do here at Center for Power and Healing. And I also offer coaching based on the book, Reclaiming Your Sacred Path, which is really intended for people who are looking for a way to resume their spiritual journey. And I guess my mission and my aspiration for the book and for the show and for the work that I do is that I help people who feel stuck to set themselves free. That's what I hope to do. So we're going to talk about a really interesting aspect of all of that tonight, about where we find meaning. And one of the places is magical symbols, and that is one of the subjects that we'll be talking about tonight with our guest. It is was my introduction to her. I'll talk to you about that when I introduce her. But these magical symbols that we use, whether it's the pentacle, whether it's the Reiki symbols, whatever it may be, they help us get in touch with meaning that goes beyond our physical existence and our mental existence. And we're going to talk about that a lot tonight. And we're live tonight, so you can call in anytime at 929-477-3560. And if you're listening on podcast later, you can ask any questions or comment, anything you like, at John, J-O-N, at powerandhealing.com. And if you call in, please don't get discouraged if you're on hold for a bit, as I'm still mastering the multitasking aspects of all of this. But given that, I am relieved to say that at UTC 9:22 p.m., which was about 8 hours ago, Mercury went direct. That is highly very good news. So I wrote the book, and I've been doing this show to share my perspective of why we're here and also to hear your perspective. I really would like to have a dialogue with you and have that conversation about how to go about staying aligned with your soul purpose for this lifetime. We feel the longing for something greater in our lives greater than ourselves at some point in our life, and we begin to search for it. When we know that there's something more to us than this body and this stuff, this career, these things, we have that awakening, and we start to look around. And in some cases, in a kind of panic, you know, kind of saying, well, there's a hurry now. Now that I've realized this, I need to get on with it. And we end up in metaphysical stores looking around for looking at all the bells and singing bowls and tarot cards and all of the devices and tools and means by which we can connect with spirit. And we think that the answer must be in there somewhere. And the answer is in there. It came in the door with you, because you are a spiritual being having a physical experience, and you don't need to become something you already are. That it really, in a lot of cases, is more of a question of learning to release resistance rather than acquiring some suit of spiritual clothes to turn us into something else. And a lot of you know all that already, but I want us to just have this groundwork, this understanding in common. You know, the first part of reclaiming your sacred path in the process and in the book, the process that I teach and the book, is to create a vision for your spiritual life. And a part of creating a vision for your spiritual life is knowing where you stand. You know, designing any journey, if you're going on vacation or a spiritual journey, you have to be able to say, this is my starting point, and define what it is you want to create in terms of a life path, in terms of a spiritual path. What will it look like, feel like, sound like? Who will you be with? How will it be? Are you a solitary and you like it that way? Are you a part of a group and you like it that way? Or you aspire to that? Creating a vision for the spiritual life you want to create, confirming what matters most to you, the values that drive you, and using a cycle of divination, manifestation, and healing to walk your path with integrity. And the subjects that we're going to be talking about starting, you know, I mean, tonight and over the last several episodes, you know, these are all subjects that are the metaphysics of our spiritual lives. Divination, getting your own guidance from spirit, your own autonomous direct channel to spirit, however you do that. Manifestation, which is focusing and directing energy toward an intention. And healing, which is rebuilding your resilience and making sure that you are not depleting yourself in the course of the work and the things that you do in your life. And using those things to walk your own path, along with anything else you find as you go along. Because once you get in motion, you will begin to see things emerge. So if there's anybody, given that that's sort of the subjects for this show, if there's anyone that you think would be cool to list to hear from, to have on this show, or if you would like to be on this show, or if you have any questions or comments, please contact me at John, J-O-N, at powerandhealing.com. So this is episode 29 of Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. And after 24 episodes on BBM Global Network through the spring, I took the summer off and I'm starting again. I started again in September, October timeframe. And so this is now we're five episodes into the work with Pagans Tonight Radio Network. And if you noticed, if you are on the computer on this show, the screen is different and you're looking at something called Global Wicca Summit. And Global Wicca Summit was an event that took place in September that I would encourage you to go into the archives at Blog Talk Radio and look at Global Wicca Summit, because it was 2 weeks of really talking about how we see Wicca and, you know, what Wicca is and all the ways, the many ways that Wicca is expressed in the world. And so that's the reason for the platform. We'll be on this platform until December, as the Pagans Tonight Radio Network is under construction. And so we will be here. I will be here on the first and third Thursdays of the month at 8 p.m. Central Time. And if you're on my mailing list, you will get the link for whatever platform I'm working on. And that link or that email is John, J-O-N, at powerandhealing.com. And www.powerandhealing.com is my website if you are interested in finding out more about me and the work that I do. So the, next week, by the way, so this is December 6th, 2018. And on December 20th, we're going to be getting very close to Yule, and we'll be talking about creating a vision for the new calendrical year, really for the light half of the year. So we talk about the big creating a vision with reclaiming your sacred path, but then there's also creating the same kind of picture of what do you want to be able to say you accomplished at the end of the light half of the year to come. What do you want to be able to say at Samhain of 2019 that you were able to make happen, you were able to grow, plant and seed and plant and grow and nurture during the course of 2019, the light half of the year? So we'll be talking about that. I'll talk about that more at the end of the show, but that's what's going to happen in 2 weeks on December 20th. So tonight's guest, I am very lucky and very happy to have Laura Tempest Zakroff on the show tonight. And we're going to be talking about Laura's path and her practice and her many talents. And as I said, the subject of one of her books, Sigil Witchery, which is Crafting Magical Symbols. And I met Laura at the Witch's Night Out in Ballard, Washington, here in Seattle, Ballard, part of Seattle, Washington. And when I saw her booth and met her, I just was instantly wanted to have this conversation with her because she is obviously so multifaceted and multi-talented. And we're going to be talking about her path and her practice tonight. And, you know, when I read her book, Sigil Witchery, and started working through it, it got me thinking about, obviously it got me thinking about symbols. So magical symbols have always been important to me. I work with runes, I work with tarot. And if you're anything like me, I know in elementary school I was drawing what turned out to be platonic solids in my notebook. I didn't know it at the time, but I've always been oriented to symbols. And so this is great for me, but this magical symbols, this is no small thing. You think about the symbols that we use in our lives. And tattoos, for example, people talk about getting symbols tattooed. These are extremely important because that energy, the energy of the symbol that you put on your body, influences your body and your mind and your life. And so it's chosen carefully, ideally. The symbol, if it has resonance for you, you can partner with it for divination, for manifestation, for healing. And we're going to be talking about all of that. And it put me in mind of something I read a long time ago, sort of a kind of meta question about this, which is, where do you find meaning? Symbols are profoundly meaningful, and everybody has their own set of symbols that are meaningful. And Laura's going to talk about that. But, you know, it struck me, it reminded me of something. It reminded me of something I read a long time ago. The dominant conversation in our culture is at the level of mind, the level of intellect, what we can do, we can build, we can invent, make more of. And there's a guy named Jerry Mander who in 1991 wrote a book called In the Absence of the Sacred. And when we talk about magical symbols, we're talking about sacred symbols. And, you know, think of that title as the beginning of a sentence, In the Absence of the Sacred. Sacred is a really big word. Sacred symbols is a very big thing. And this is a word you feel, or I feel, more than I understand. Blessed, consecrated, venerated, revered. And he quotes, he talks about the fact that over the hundreds of years that the Western culture, the white culture, has interacted with Native Americans, Native people of this and other continents, this is a quote from his book. They have told us that our culture is missing something, and we ignored them, because to further inquire would have meant stopping what we were doing and finding another way. That's the end of the quote. So money, momentum, ego investment prevented us from asking not just what can we do, but what should we do? That's a question of meaning. What is what I'm about to do? What does it mean? And so magical symbols as sacred objects, as sacred messages, are a really important part of bringing meaning back into our lives and allowing us to ask the question of, we know what we can do, but what should we do? Because if nothing is sacred, all we have is the mind and the body. the heart and soul have to weigh in on the subject of what is sacred. So after a brief musical interlude here, I'm going to bring Laura on. And I want to tell you a little bit about her, or actually several bits. Laura is a practicing modern traditional witch for over 20 years. Her early days, she was a community leader and public spokesperson for paganism. She is a professionally trained visual artist and designer with a degree from Rhode Island School of Design. And all of her work embodies myth and the esoteric in her drawings, her paintings, her jewelry, her talismans, and her other designs. She's a dancer. As Tempest, she has been a major pioneer of fusion belly dance for more than 18 years. And she lives in Seattle with her partner, musician Nathaniel Johnstone, with whom they have a band called the Nathaniel Johnstone Band. And she has many other collaborative projects in the works. And they also have three cats, possibly four. We'll find out about that when Laura comes on the show. So when we come back, we'll discuss Laura's eclectic and accomplished path, her book, Sigil Witchery, and her upcoming book, Weave the Liminal. So stay with us. This is Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. I'm John Anastasio. I'm your host, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. If you want to call in, the number is 929-477-3560. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. This is your host, John Anastasio, and I am here with Laura Tempest-Zakroff. And Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good evening, John.
It's so good to have you here. I really appreciate you being here tonight with us. So you have so many things that you do. You're a visual artist, a writer, a dancer. You have several books in print, and you know, books that you've either written or contributed to, and you've been on a witchcraft path for so long. So since this is a show about reclaiming your sacred path, I'd love to hear the story of your path, of how you arrived at this place, and you know, kind of what set you on your way and what happened between then and now.
Oh, gosh, we only have less than an hour.
Yeah, I had a feeling it's not going to be a short story, but, you know, when did you first realize that you were destined for a spiritual path, or realize that you needed to pursue it?
I say actually fairly, fairly young. So I'm the product of an Italian, Sicilian, Catholic, and a Russian Slavic Jew. And Mom won, so we got to be raised Catholic, and very early on, I just kind of brushed up against the church with a lot of the doctrine and how things were done. And I'm like, this is not how it's supposed to be. I wasn't sure how it was supposed to be, but I just knew. And
right.
So I think there was a point, there's a story in We the Liminal of pretty much when I was six, I decided I was going to sit on the altar because that's where my brother sat during a school trip down to the church. And I got thrown in the principal's office for that one. Girls do not belong on the altar. Like, I didn't think otherwise. And pretty much all through my younger years, I just didn't feel like that's where I was supposed to be. And I think it was around 12 or 14 that one of my brother's girlfriends gave me The Mists of Avalon to read, which, you know, was kind of a problematic text when I think about Mary and Zimmer Bradley and such. But at that point, that was, what do you mean there were other spiritualities besides Abrahamic religion? And that set me off in the path to find, you know, what other things are out there that are accessible. And shortly after, I think by the time I was 16 or 17, I found Drawing Down the Moon by Margot Adler.
Mm-hmm.
And that confirmed, like, this is actual thing. There are other people who believe and see the world like I do. And I was finally able to start meeting people after I left for college and experimenting out in the world and finding other witches. So I guess it's the not-so-shaggy dog story.
Right. Well, and so your spiritual search, really the beginning of your pagan and your path as a witch, began when you were fairly young, and before you had done all of the building of your art and your writing and your music and dance, or were you doing all of that at the same time?
Well, I've always been an artist. Actually, the age of 3 is when I first started taking formal art classes. And my art definitely, even early on, reflected how I was seeing the world, exploring Egyptian mythology and Babylonian and Native American, like looking into all these myths and having them influence the styles, the symbols, the imagery of retelling myths in my artwork. And you can see that all the way from the early years all the way through high school, and then in college it became more of a, all right, how am I really focusing my own personal vision, and what is the mythology that I'm exploring that I see in the world? So myth making as an artistic and spiritual process. I didn't really actually start dancing until I was in my early 20s, and that became a very natural step into it.
Right. And so you have just, it's, you know, you're telling a story of really kind of knowing who you are and expressing that through all of the things that you do, which is really pretty cool. That's great. So the work with the dancing, with the fusion belly dancing, do you perform or teach or both of the above? Or
yes, I've been performing and teaching it. Well, performing it for almost 20 years now, and for teaching since 2004, I think, was I first started teaching workshops on fusion dance. So that actually, you know, kind of came not too long after discovering formal witchcraft, and that was a thing in the world. And like, this movement, this is another way to bring in the spirituality and to explore the world around me and my own body as well.
So now, was Sigil Magic your first book? Witchery.
The first book was The Witch's Cauldron, which is part of the Witch's Tool series that Llewellyn has put out. And that was actually the sixth book in their series, but my first book with them. And then Sigil Witchery was the second book that came out in January of this year.
Right. I wanted to talk. So let's, if it's okay with you, I'd like to kind of go through sort of, you know, starting with Sigil Witchery, you know, that book, and then whatever else you might want to talk about in terms of your work. And then also talking, and then really excited to hear about Weave the Liminal. So how about, is it good to start with Sigil Witchery? Shall we do that?
Sure. That's a good place to start.
Okay. Great. So when I started working through the thing that a couple of things struck me about your sort of frame of reference that you set up in the book about, the fact that language, the letters and symbols and numbers that we orient that are important to us are the ones that, the sigils that speak to me are the sigils that really have meaning and power for me. Whereas trying to acquire another whole alphabet is somewhat difficult. You can learn to appreciate it. And you used your own example about the runes in the book. And so just thinking about about magical symbols and relating to magical symbols as an organic thing for each person. I mean, you talk a little bit about that?
We all come into this world, we all have, like I say, it's our own personal sort of baggage, our lens for how we see the world. The language that we grew up with, the symbols that are in our household and our spirituality religions, what we see on the street, there's so many different symbols that become innate and intuitive to us. Like you think about a stop sign, right? Especially in this country, everybody sees an octagonal red sign, you think it's going to mean stop. So mm-hmm. it's something that becomes part of the collective consciousness versus, especially with Western ceremonial magic, there's this idea, you have to learn, Enochian, or you have to learn Theban, you have to learn these other things in order to actually use magical language and power. And those things are definitely powerful unto themselves, and devoting yourself to the practice of them is worthwhile. But most people, especially the older you are, the harder it is to pick something else up and for it to be mm-hmm. intuitive.
Absolutely.
So I think about, the second language, it's like when I think in Spanish and I go to another country, someone speaks to me in German, my brain goes, okay, it's not English, so here's some Spanish. Yeah, there's this sort of circuitous route that you come to. So with crafting a magical symbol, and if magic is, based in visualization and our right brain and our thought, going directly to your source, to your root of how you see symbols is going to be far more mm-hmm. effective than having to translate it to another symbol that you're not familiar with or, don't use regularly. That doesn't mean something, but you just reference this one book once.
Right.
That makes sense.
Well, yeah, that makes perfect sense, because if you're translating, then what you're doing is you're taking something, as you said, you want it to be intuitive. It was like I said about the word sacred in the beginning, that I don't just hear the word sacred, I feel the word sacred. It has mm-hmm. a very deep meaning for me. And if you don't have that instantaneous reaction, it's very hard to generate energy for magic, right? I mean, if you're going up to your monkey mind to find out what you're talking about, it can derail your process.
Sure.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. The least amount of barriers to visualization, to your personal power, to how you, whatever effect you want to see in the world, I think the more immediate it becomes. You don't
right.
need all of the stuff there to make
right.
it work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And then you go from there to the helping people understand common symbols, like you mentioned the stop sign, but you start with the dot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with a single straight line, and you help people sort of relate to those things on their own. And what led you to take that learning perspective?
Well, when I started doing teaching these workshops and leading it into the book, it was my own visual crafting method came from, years of working in art and looking at, all of the different symbols around me and, whether it's hieroglyphics or whatever, and seeing the common language there. And so how do you craft that if it's not based in ceremonial magic, if it's not based in chaos magic? And this is the common language. And it goes back mm-hmm. thousands and thousands of years. And everybody, learns how to make a dot, make a line, mm-hmm. learn something in geometry. And so when I was thinking about how, when I'm making something almost in a trance-like state, why am I breaking it down? Why am I putting the star here? Why am I putting the triangle there? And that reverse engineering came up with this method. And, I love that at the end of the class, you were like, these are all things I already knew but didn't really consciously recognize, and I feel like
uh-huh.
I can actually do this. That's so exciting.
Yeah, that's great. So you do sigil crafting classes?
Yes, I teach. Actually, mm-hmm. I just got off tour. I was on the road for 7 weeks, and I taught, I taught it about 36 times all over the
wow.
country.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, you know, yeah, and you also, in the book, you're very clear about not forcing it in terms of using a new alphabet. But so once a reader or one of your students identifies the symbols that have the most meaning for them, what is the process to go from there to creating? I'm sure it starts with an intention, right? But to creating sigils and amulets and spells and talismans, what's the process from I've got this symbol set that I find meaningful to having something that can be helpful to me metaphysically?
So it's a four-step process, and I like to say only three of those steps are necessary, which makes all the slackers happy. And the step one is what is required in any kind of spellcraft or magical working, which is determine what is it that you wish to accomplish. So is that getting a new job? Is it healing someone? Is it that you want to get a new place to live? Are you looking for a partner? And what are the things that you would do any kind of spell or ritual for? You know, figuring out what this is. So that's step one. Step two is to brainstorm, which is to get focused into what are the details. So if you want a new job, yeah, sure, you can light a candle and say, I want a new job, and you can get a new job, but is it the job you're looking for? Magic follows the path of least resistance. So that means you're going to look at that job and say, all right, I want to work, you know, 5 days a week or 40 hours. I want to work this kind of position. I want to make this much money. These are the things you would brainstorm out, get those details in there. And then step three is to design it. So looking at those words or what you've written and finding the symbols in your own background that aligns to that. So that can be the numbers, like you want to make $50,000 a year. Okay, well, 50, that's something that can be incorporated. Whether you're using the traditional Arabic symbols for them or if you're looking at Roman numerals, whatever it is that you want to use for that. And sort of something being, you know, a steady position that has upward mobility. You might use a dot coming up with an arrow facing north from there. So there's that. And so that's your design process, is combining it together. And at the end of the design process, you'll come up with a sigil that your brain recognizes and says, yes, this is a thing. And from there, you actually don't have to do anything else, which I know surprises all the ceremonial and chaos magicians. It's like, but how do you activate it? How do you release it? You've already done that. You've already basically wrote a computer program in your mind of what is it you want to accomplish, and once your brain recognizes it as a symbol that pleases you, it has begun. But because we are, I like to say, a ritual and a tacky species, there's step number four, which is to apply and or acknowledge it. So let's say you do want to carve that sigil on a candle, you know, like a green candle for a job or what, you know, the color. Color doesn't really matter. It's all your personal preference in there. If it's for a healing spell, maybe you're anointing somebody with it, or a poppet, you're building a healing poppet and the sigil's on it. Or if it's something for cleansing, you're carving it into a bar of soap and you wash with that every day. You're making it into cookies. You know, you're tattooing it on yourself. Like, what are the other steps that help you continue that vision along? But again, they're not necessary. They are things that the human spirit really likes to do. Like, it feels like a little bit more accomplished. But there are many people who work really well with visualization magic, and that moment the sigil is done, that's it. They close their little grimoire, their book of shadows, and that's it. So, three to four steps.
That's great. So the interesting thing, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, you know, why do we do that? You know, and the thing that strikes me is that being able to create the sigil and say the process was the spell, right? And so the thing has begun. You've done the job of creating the spell through creating the sigil for all of the reasons and all, you know, to focus on your intention, right?
Yes.
Is that fair?
That's right on.
It seems like the physical acts are almost helping us release our resistance and fear that it might not happen. What do you think about that?
I think that for, you know, human beings, we like to have the tangible. So, you know, if we can see ourselves as spirits, but we're stuck into this physical world, so working with the metaphysical is finding that place in between, that liminal place between, you know, who we are in these bodies and the universe. So all the things that we use for sympathetic magic, the herbs, the candles, the stones, you know, all of the accoutrements of that, those are things that the power isn't in them, it's in us, but we use them to help us visualize, and it makes us feel that we are accomplishing the thing if we do the physical activity, because that's that tactile thing. So some people really need that, and some people need a lot of ritual and a lot of affirmation and going into that, and again, the other people who just close their book and they're done, they don't feel like they need it. You know, so it's a very individual experience as well. Neither one is more powerful or correct. It's what works for you.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it's a great book, and I'm learning a lot. I'm still working through it, and I'm learning a ton from it. I appreciate that you wrote it.
Thank you.
Sure. If somebody, so let's do this for the first time in this show, and we'll do it again later. If somebody wants to know more about your work, your writing, where they want to know more about this, where can they find the book?
So the book is published through Llewellyn, so it is available everywhere. If you want to get it directly from me, I have thesigilwitchery.com, which is a very easy website to find. Or you can go for the big long one with my entire name, which is lauratempestsackroft.com. I always recommend, too, if you don't want to get it online or you might see me later, you want to get it signed, you can, you know, please support your local metaphysical witchy occult shop. That's a community space. And if you live out somewhere where there are no shops, then there's always Amazon.
Right.
That's the list on my list.
Right. I understand. And so the that's great. And so you said you offer workshops and coaching on this. Do you do that virtually as well as in person, or how do you do that work?
I have plans to do a virtual class of it online with it's going to be with the House of Twigs, but I have not been home long enough to actually set that up. I haven't been on the road so much. So in-person workshops is kind of the best option right now because I'm going around to a lot of places. I also offer for people who want a sigil created by me, they can find out more about that. But kind of the thing is when people are like, well, you should make a sigil for that. I'm like, hey, you should make a sigil for that because here's the book. Yeah, I really want people to, I feel like everybody can do this. And every time I teach the workshop, I always have someone who says, oh, I can't draw. I can't even do stick figures. I can't even draw straight lines. And by the end of the workshop, they're like, I can do this. And sure enough, within a week or two, they're sending me big pictures of the sigils they created. And it's like, I know you can do the thing. That's, you know, this is kind of the human birthright, is being able to draw and affect magic. So it is accessible. You can do it through the book, but a lot of people say that, you know, they also find it very enjoyable to do it with me, and it kind of can clear some things up if you don't learn that well from books. It clearly covers everything you need to know in the book too.
Right. So the two websites to get information about sigil witchery and the stuff that you do would be sigilwitchery.com and lauratempestzackroft.com.
Yes.
Okay. Any other way people can get in touch with you, or would you prefer they do it through that website? Those websites.
The websites have contact forms. You can find me, of course, on Facebook as well. There's an author page on a modern traditional witch, but through the website tends to be the best thing because Facebook messages are not reliable. I don't always get notifications. So yeah, email is good. Websites are good.
Right. Perfect. Okay. So, that's great. And again, if you have any questions for Laura, or you want to discuss this subject further, if you have any questions or you have a comment, please give us a call at 929-477-3560. And we're going to play a little bit of music again right now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about book two, or it's not book two, but the upcoming book, which hopefully will be with us soon. It's called Weave the Liminal. So we're here with Laura Tempest Zakroff. Thank you for joining us tonight. And please stay with us. We will be right back. Welcome back to Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. I'm your host, John Anastasio, and we're here with Laura Tempest Zakroff. And we've been talking about magical symbols and her book, Sigil Witchery. And the book that she has coming out next, and hopefully we'll find out exactly when, is called Weave the Liminal. And I am eager to hear about what this book is about. I mean, tell us about the title. I mean, I found that name to be really evocative of being able to reach kind of a new level of being. I mean, is that what? Tell us about the title. Tell us about the book.
All right. Well, thank you. So I look at witchcraft as, or particularly for witches, as that we are weaving. We are working the threads of reality, whether that is metaphysical, physical, you know, everything in between. And if you look at life as a tapestry, that we are each our own threads, and we're interweaving and creating patterns with each other in the places that we are, you know, then you see that being active as a weaver, that you are using magic, that you're using the world around you and interacting with it. And so there's that one part that's where the weave comes from. And the liminal is that space in between that, I love the idea of liminal spaces that are somewhere, you know, between dawn and dusk, and it can be considered one, and we hear that a lot with different spiritual realms. The idea of right before you fall asleep is a place that's right in between, and same with the waking. So it's those possibilities. It's where now things are quite fully formed, which gives you even more potential. It's also the realm of the spirits, of God, you know, all of these different things. So when I was thinking about what was this book going to be called, I really wanted something that was evocative, that was inspiring, that said, okay, this is a task as witches, to form our own path and to work together. And so we have that, and then the subtitle is Living Modern Traditional Witchcraft. And essentially, the book is about crafting an authentic practice of witchcraft for yourself, regardless of where you live, what your background is, what you do for a living, all of these different things. There's so many books, especially in the 90s when I first started, there's Italian witchcraft and Scottish witchcraft and Irish this and that and all these other things. And being the result, the product of a long line of people who like to sleep with other people from different cultures, and living in at one point in New Jersey and South Carolina and Rhode Island and California, all these different places. It's like, how do you say you're, this kind of witch when you've never been to Europe or somewhere else? For example, it's like, oh, I practice Scottish witchcraft. Have you been to Scotland? No. Well, how do you make peace with that? How do you not pay attention to your immediate world around you? That's not exactly the most authentic experience. Many people often have felt disillusioned from those books. They're like, well, it didn't really work for me. Okay, you don't have to pull from something over there. There are many traditions that we are making every single day. Traditions don't have to be something that's been around for 7,000 years. They are things that are born every day and are altered and changed. So I set out in the book to give folks a look at where you come from, where you're living, what your timetable is, what your environment is, and what are your morals and ethics. And from those five points, you can craft a very authentic path that works for you.
That's
the whole focus of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because, the idea of it feels to me like when you talk about weave the liminal the way you just described it, that you're making use of that space in between different states of being, and you're saying, let's not just observe it and live in it. Let's weave it. Let's make things happen here. Is that fair?
Yes. You want to be a practitioner versus just a participant. So having, to say that you have the power and that you can influence the world around you and understand, take some time to see how it works. Use your intuition, use perspective. These are all powerful things.
Right. And it's interesting because I go back to the theme that you talked about in Sigil Witchery about the symbols that resonate for you, your authentic self in choosing and using sigils. And this is the same message, right? It's really about consulting your own inner truth.
Yes. Especially in this day and age, so many people are kind of hung up with this. You're doing it wrong.
Right.
Like if you don't give people, you could say, maybe this is a better way. If you're not giving them another way to look at it, then just saying you're doing it wrong and this is the only way is really very short-sighted and not very helpful.
And it also puts the person into their cognitive mind, which takes them out of their intuition and out of their sort of spiritual perspective.
Yeah, very much so.
So was this book the result? Is this sort of the when you talk about yourself as a modern traditional witch, and it almost sounds as though you're describing the pathway to get there, but you're not saying be like me. You're saying there's a process and there's a way to think about this that will get you to your authentic self.
Yes, this is actually, this book is when I started on this path in somewhere around the mid-2000s. I was like, okay, I'm going to write a book because there's nothing out there. The books that I would recommend to other people would be something like Witchcraft for Tomorrow by Doreen Valiente, which, being written in 1978 by a very nice British lady, it has certain qualities to it that don't necessarily carry on to, into the United States, into modern practice. I'm like, this is the best thing you've got, but what can we do that considers more modern things and considers a more American perspective? And that book died in a horrible hard drive failure and a motherboard fry. So I didn't
oh boy.
Go, yeah, so I kind of listened to your verse and like, well, maybe I will attempt this later. And I've been writing for a very long time, was an editor of a magazine, and been blogging for a long time as well over various topics. So getting back into being a public figure and blogging about witchcraft, I thought, okay, around 2014, maybe it's time to start thinking about books again. And The Witch's mm-hmm. Cauldron was a great way to kind of get my feet into the book format. And then from there, Sigil Witchery was definitely, people are like, you have to do this thing. I'm like, okay, great, but there's this other thing. So I'm so excited. This book is, it's a long time coming. And it's technically somewhere between the third and fourth book. I was contracted, I signed the contract to write this after Sigil Witchery, but then Jason Mankey and I wrote The Witch's Altar, which also just came out this past month.
Also through Llewellyn?
Yes, also through Llewellyn. It's also part of the Witch's School series. And as it happened with the publishing schedule, they wanted that book first. So my fourth book became my third book. So they were like, how many books do you have out? I'm like, I don't know. I also edited an anthology that came out. The New Erotica came out in September. So I'm like, I don't know what number book I'm on. I'm just going to give up at this point.
Right. I'm just gonna do what I'm doing, and you can count. Somebody else can count. Yeah, that's great. So when will Weave the Liminal be available?
Well, I think it's starting to ship right now. I just received, what is today? Today is Thursday? So I think it was on Tuesday that I got my author copies. And so that means that it is getting into the warehouse in the Lowland. And so if you pre-ordered it from somewhere, they're probably shipping any moment now if they not have already shipped. I haven't put it on my website yet because I'm a little superstitious about putting things up for sale before I actually get them in stock.
That would make me nervous. I know. So, awesome.
But the great thing is we get a nice little solstice present.
A nice little what? Solstice present. Yes, that's right. And as a matter of fact, between Sigil Witchery and Weave the Liminal and name your other books again.
The Witch's Cauldron and The Witch's Altar and the New Erotia, a Witch's Handbook to Magical Resistance.
So those books by Laura Tempest Zakroff, Yule is coming up, and you know where to find them. That's awesome. So, again, I invite you to call. We have a few minutes left. The number to call would be 929-477-3560. And if you have any other questions or any comments you want to make to me, you can reach me at John, J-O-N, at powerandhealing.com. And if you want to get in touch with Laura, you can either go to sigilwitchery.com or you can go to lauratempestzakroff.com and fill out a contact form. So, Laura, what else should we know about you before we say goodnight?
Let's see. So you had said in the introduction about the fourth cat is imminent. And yes, now we do have four cats.
Yay. All right.
In August, a little tiny black cat showed up at our back door. And so we tried to see, we thought she belonged to somebody, but apparently she now belongs to us. So, or we belong to her.
Yeah, right. So right. I was going to say, not sure who makes that decision.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, like, she just showed up, like, I live here now. And we're like, okay, great. We have four cats. So that is one thing. And coming up into the year, there's a lot of festivals that we'll be at. We'll be at PantheaCon in San Jose, California in February. I'll also be at PaganaCon in March. And I'll be at the Magical Women's Conference in London in June. And there's probably going to be a whole lot of other things in between. But there's always a bit of travel, so folks can
that's great.
Contact.
It's wonderful to hear that that it's going that way. And I think that anybody who wants to know more about how to connect with you and be a part of what it is you're doing, you know, the websites that we talked about, lauratempestzachroff.com and sigilwitchery.com. It sounds like the best way to keep track of you, huh?
Yes, definitely.
All right. Very good. Well, Laura, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on the show tonight. This has been a great conversation for me. I'm excited to read Weave the Liminal. I'm going to go find out when I can get it after we hang up. And so for those of you who want to know more, again, John at Power and J-O-N at powerandhealing.com and Laura at her websites. And so, Laura, any last words?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I hope everybody has a very happy, healthy solstice as we go into the new year.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much. Well, again, thank you, Laura, and thanks, everybody, for listening, and we hope to hear from you. So a little bit about what's going on with me right now. The book Reclaiming Your Sacred Path is available it's available also on Amazon, but it's in the Washington and Oregon area. You can find it in a number of metaphysical stores. And if you want to send me an email, you can find out about where to get Reclaiming Your Sacred Path locally, to support those businesses. Yes, the place to find out about that is at www.powerandhealing.com. And if you go there, you will find on the landing page of my website two things. You'll find the link to those previous episodes of Reclaiming Your Sacred Path, but you'll also find a link that says free chapter for radio listeners. And if you click on that link, it'll take you to a contact form. If you just fill that out for me, just your name and email, really, then I will be happy to email you the PDF of chapter 5 of my book, which helps you with the fundamental psychic hygiene of grounding and centering and releasing, and will give you a sense of what the book's about. So please take advantage of that if you want to. And thank you again for listening. I will be here I'm here on Whidbey Island weekdays and weekend hours by appointment for Reiki energy healing, shamanic healing, and coaching based on the book, which I also can do over Skype or Zoom. I am also at Stargazers in Bellevue Wednesdays through the end of December from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. for Reiki and energy healing. And then Fridays beginning in January, I'll be moving to Fridays. But you could just call the store Stargazers in Bellevue, Washington, to find out more about when I'll be around there. My contact again, John, J-O-N, at powerandhealing.com, or through the website to get more information about me and about what I do, or to get the free chapter. The next program on December 20th will be on seeking a vision. And it's, you know, creating a vision for your year, for what story do you want to be able to tell about what you did and what you accomplished in the light half of the year that we have ahead of us. And that'll be a good way to spend some time using the dark half of the year to think about what did you accomplish last year and what would you like to stop, start, and continue going into the year to come. And so we'll talk about why you need a vision, why is it important, and is it seeing visions? Is it, you know, what is it? We'll talk about how does a vision guide us? And it actually functions as your North Star, right? And the many sources of information that we have to build it. And the information that I want you to think about is pay attention between now and then. So this is the new moon, right? We are in the new moon period right now. And this is a time for beginnings. And so let's begin to think about this vision. Let's begin to think about our passions, the things that really light us up, and the things that repel us that we want to release. What are our life experiences that have taught us so many lessons, and our past life experiences and the patterns we can find there, and our intuitive knowing of what feels right to us, what for us has a path with heart. And my wish for you is that you find that path with heart for yourself. And I want to thank you for being with me tonight and being with Laura. And I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. And until next time, may you blessed be. I hope you've enjoyed your time here on Reclaiming Your Sacred Path. I'm your host, John Anastasio, and I want to thank you for spending your time with me this evening. If you have any questions or you'd like more information about anything we've discussed tonight, please email me at john@powerandhealing.com. And please check out my website, www.powerandhealing.com, to learn more about my healing work and the group and individual learning experiences that I offer to help you reclaim your sacred path. If you're interested in the book, Reclaiming Your Sacred Path, you can find it at the Core Store, C-O-R-R Store, of the Corellian Nativist Tradition. And that website is www.corellian.com. And please join me on the first and third Thursdays of the month at 8 p.m. Central Time for more conversation about growth and the human spirit. Until we meet again, may you blessed be.